Hello and welcome to another virtual author event at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and today the Poison Pen is delighted to welcome back virtually one of our favorite authors, Jesse Q. Sutanto. Jesse is the author of a number of different books for children and adults, including Dial A for Aunties, and well, that was unexpected, and her new book is Vera Wong's Unsolicited Advice for Murderers. We are also fortunate to be joined today by New York Times bestselling author Lynn Painter, who has written a number of books for YAs and adults, including Betting on the Movies, Mr. Wrong Number, and whose latest book is The Love Wager. Before we begin, for those tuning in, the Poison Pen does have copies of Jesse's and Lynn's books, and we would be happy to hold one for you or put it in the mail. Just give us a call or go online to the Poison Pen bookstore. Now, I would like to welcome in Jesse and Lynn.
Hello.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for joining us today.
I am so excited to talk about this book. I told Jesse, I sent her a message today. And I read it a couple months ago, but I reread it a couple days ago, you know, in preparation for today. And I actually had a dream about Vera, like she was coming for me. I love this book so much, and I can't wait to talk about it. What time is it where you're at, by the way, Jesse?
It's actually a very reasonable time for once. It's not 5 a.m. It's 8 a.m. I am living in the future, and it is sunny and bright.
That's wonderful. Well, let's just jump into it. I am dying to talk about Vera. Okay, from page one, she's just a force. She wakes up every day without an alarm at 4:30, and of course has to text her son to make sure he's up, because, you know, when she was his age, he was up at 4 o'clock at this, you know, and he's wasting his life away because, and I had to write this down, late mornings are for toddlers and Europeans. That was just my favorite. Like from page one, it's amazing. And I was thinking about this, and I think it's really tricky for authors to create quirky characters, because once you start layering on these super unique mannerisms and traits and behaviors, it can feel like a caricature or over the top unless there's the authenticity that grounds it. And I feel like Vera from page one is absolutely grounded and 100% for real. And so I wanted to ask you how you created Vera. Now, obviously from the dedication alone, and if you read the Aunties books and know a little bit about her, you know, she's influenced and inspired by family members. But I'm curious to what, by the way, I'm so sorry. I'm distracting myself out of the corner of my eye by talking with my hands because I'm ridiculous with it. So I'm sorry. I would like to know if there is a visor wearing person in your life who doesn't even need her Apple Watch because she knows exactly how many steps she takes in her daily power walk. Like how much was she inspired by your family and how much is fictitious?
Oh my God, I love it. Okay, so to be honest, that visor wearing person is me. So you know what's funny is that I'm close to one of my neighbors and we take daily walks together. And every time like I post an Instagram video, kind of making fun of my mom, like pretending to be that like older Chinese mom character, and I have like my visor on, she commented, she was like, what people don't realize is this is literally just you. And I was like, damn it, hide her comment quickly. But then the rest of Vera is very much both my parents, and I consider it payback for having to put up with them this long, because like my parents wake up at 4:30 in the morning and they don't understand why nobody else does, and they're always like, oh, you're so lazy. You know, they're like, oh, hang on, okay, they're like, you're so lazy, you know, and you're so young, you should be up really early to like really seize the day. And I'm like, I don't understand, what is there to be seized at 4:30 in the morning? And they're like, the day. The day is there to be seized. So, and then they, and a lot of like the little quirks that Vera has, like, oh my God, like how she thinks that drinking cold water is really bad for you. And will, you know, and it's always something random, right? Like it'll give you liver cancer. That's totally my parents, you know? They're like, they're like, oh my God, if you stay up past like 9 p.m. at night, you know, you're gonna get like eye cancer. I don't know, like it's always some kind of cancer.
Well, and that's one of the things that made Vera so great, is that there's never a doubt. She's 100% confident in her rightness about all of these weird little quirks. Like I flagged that whole cold water thing because I thought that's hysterical that everybody feels like they have the coldest water for their guests. And she's like, no, it is room temperature. I mean, you're ridiculous. Like it hardens your arteries if you drink cold water. And I'm like, that is so funny.
Yeah, like my parents just have a million and one of these things. Like, oh my God, just a month ago, my dad was like, oh God, you know, like so-and-so passed away and there was like literally no reason. I think it was because he was always drinking cold water. And I was like, oh no, that's a shame, you know, that's terrible. And then later on, I find out like he had a whole host of like health issues, like including diabetes that went unchecked. But to my parents, it was like unexplained. And so it must be the cold water.
And see, I love that right in the beginning, she's texting her son about how he's not up early enough in the day. And she's like, your uncle so-and-so, you know, he died. I don't remember the exactitude. And he's like, mom, he was hit by a bus. Like, it was completely not because he wasn't up at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's my parents.
And I think it's really funny because I don't remember where I read, but I read your story about when you brought your husband home to meet your family. And he was, you know, of course, poisoned. And the story of all of your relatives and neighbors just constantly giving him like a million home remedies that he needed to do. And him sounding like being like the best boy and doing all of them was so Vera. Like when I read this book, I'm like, okay, so Vera is like her whole family. Like it was so like Vera would have done all of those things.
Yeah, no, literally, exactly. And they're very like, they get offended if you don't tell them like, oh, it was your specific home remedy that cured him. Thank you so much. Like out of the, you know, 17 home remedies that we got, it was yours that made the difference.
That is amazing. Well, another thing I wanted to talk about that I found so interesting, and it, you do this throughout the whole book and in your writing, and it's so cool. Like I am a person who I'm a very picky eater and drinker. Like I'm like a child, like chicken nuggets all the way. I don't try anything. And like my whole life I've been like, oh, I hate tea, because I think I tried tea once 20 years ago, you know, probably like Lipton, and I'm like, tea is the worst. I never want to drink that again, you know. But then in the book we see multiple, like Vera, obviously tea is important to her, but then we see multiple characters in the book where they aren't in the mood to sit down and have tea. Like they got a lot going on. There's murders. They all have secrets. There's murder investigations, and Vera will find a way to sit them down. And not only does she fix them tea, but she creates these very individualized selections. Like Vera knows what they need and she prepares it with love. And each one of the characters you see having like kind of settling into the tea and having an emotional and like surprised response to the comfort that she's like prepared in a cup specifically for them. And I thought it was really beautiful. And I was wondering, are you a tea drinker? Like how did this deep dive into tea transpire? Or is this something where everyone in the world is all about this and just Lynn in Omaha is like, I hate tea and don't even know that it's one of
them. Oh my God, I love that. Okay, so again, you know, this is like payback because so my grandparents all came from China. And so like ethnically my family is Chinese, even though like we're all in Indonesia now. So on my mom's side of the family, my grandfather was very, very traditional, like, you know, the patriarchy and all that. And so he was like, you know, you're a girl, you need to know how to brew and serve tea, you know, for your future husband and your in-laws, like properly. And so he was very passionate about like teaching that to his granddaughters. And at first I was just like, you know, this seems really boring. But then I actually got into it because he was doing all that stuff that Vera was doing in the book, like teaching us, you know, oh, so you boil the water in like a kettle and then you have to like pour the hot water over everything, like the teacups and the teapot, and then so that they're hot. And then you put like this much tea leaves, you pour away like the first brew because it's too harsh or whatever. Like all that stuff. And I found that I actually enjoyed the ceremony of it. You know, I was like, oh, this is actually really interesting. Like for myself, not so much like the serve. I don't think I ever served like my husband. I think he would freak out. He'd be like, is this poison? What is it? And then my grandfather, he would bring all sorts of tea leaves from China and have us try it. And I was like, oh, wow, yeah, like I can actually taste the difference in the leaves. And then when I was 16, we took like a big family trip to China where we went to a tea farm. And they did like a blind taste test. They had like about 6 to 8 different leaves. And they were like, oh, rate it from which one is like the best quality to like lowest quality. And I got it right. Like I was the only one. And I was like, booyah, like losers. I was a very gracious winner. Because, you know, even my grandfather got like a few wrong. And I was like, heck yeah, you know. And so, I always felt like a special affinity, I guess, for teas. And like I'm very familiar with a lot of the ingredients, like what would make you like in Chinese, you know, the yin yang. So one is like cooling and one is like heating. And I'm very familiar with that because like we believe that too in Indonesia. So like my mom would be like, don't eat that. That is so heaty, and you are so heaty already, and I can tell because your breath smells. And he would just like say this in front of everyone, and then everyone would be like, that is heady, like you shouldn't have that, you know.
And I love that scene when Vera's feeding everybody, mm-hmm. and she has that where she's saying that to people, and I thought it was so funny because like one person she's mm-hmm. like, oh, you look pale, you need to eat this, yeah. And then somebody else, she's like, no, you're clearly constipated, and the girl's like, no, no, I'm not, and she's like, no, you are, I can tell, I know these things. And I was like, that is so funny, and she was totally doing that, like you need the heating, yeah. And I thought that was so interesting. I don't have any familiarity with that whatsoever, and I loved it.
Yeah, so all of these are just from my daily life, unfortunately.
No, I think it was such a cool thing to read about because, like I said, like for someone like me who doesn't drink tea, when I was reading the part where she's telling somebody that like it tastes like milk, and then somebody tries it and they're like, it tastes like milk, and then they have this whole moment where they're like looking at their clear tea and they're like, how does something look one way and it's so different on the inside? And I was like, oh, cosmic moment, you know. So I thought it was just a really cool way to tell her story, to have her food and her tea kind of highlight who she is. I thought that was really cool. And the food, I thought, and again, not to, you know, put too fine a point on it, but I'm super picky. So a lot of times books that are very, like foodies are like, oh, I read this book and I was so hungry and stuff. And Picky Lynn is like, I don't know what that is. No, thank you. But you managed to somehow, like, the way Vera cooked, I thought it was amazing. First of all, I love the fact that she, I don't remember what time of day it was, but I mean, like early, like 11. And she's like, I've been cooking all day. And somebody's like, how have you been cooking all day? Well, she gets up at 4 in the morning. She's been cooking all day when she brings in this food. But I also thought it was really lovely, like the same thing with the tea, where the characters like eat her food and they individually have these emotional moments. Like Oliver's reaction the first time he eats her food mm-hmm. literally made me cry. Like I was like, oh, just transported him back to his late mother's cooking and like childhood mm-hmm. memories that, you know, his life hasn't been that great since his mom passed away. And it's like, that mm-hmm. was like a moment eating her food that took him back to a better time. And I was like, that is so lovely. And I just love the food in it. I thought it was incredible.
Thank you. That's so sweet of you, especially coming from you whose books are like hilarious, but then suddenly like there's like a really heartfelt moment that's like just a punch straight in the heart. And I'm like, oh, I wasn't expecting it because I was like sitting here laughing and then all of a sudden, like heartfelt moment. I still remember when I first read, so the first book of yours that I read was Mr. Wrong Number. And I really just, I was like, oh, this is so funny. The girl, you know, she's a bit of a mess, like a lovable, very lovable mess. And then later on, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but like, we kind of find out like on a deeper level why she is such a mess. And I was just like, oh, I'm not ready. Like,
and I feel like your book was full of those sneaky ones where I'm reading around all this funny stuff and then like Vera's relationship with Emma, it's like all of a sudden, you know, Emma's calling her great. Actually, I don't know how much I'm allowed to spoil. I'm the worst about spoilers. I'm just kidding. I won't say who the murderer is.
No,
but I promise. But there were so many sneaky little things like that, and I won't give away what it is. But I was like sobbing when Vera sees the time Vera's not up at 4 a.m. and she sees the sun up, mm-hmm. come up and go down. That mm-hmm. destroyed me. I was like, Vera is too strong for that. That killed me. But anyways. And one thing that I thought was super interesting about this book is that, you know, as an author, you have to decide the point of view. If you're going to do first person, third person, you know, rotate mm-hmm. points of view. And I thought it was so brilliant to use third person the way you did, because it would have been easy to want to be in Vera's head all the time and be in first person mm-hmm. or rotating first person. But I feel like by doing third person the way you did, you were not only able to see in everybody's head, but you mm-hmm. could see the ridiculous parts of Vera. And you could see the way she saw herself, like the juxtaposition. And then you also got to see her self-awareness, where sometimes she knows she's ridiculous, but she's still sticking to it. And it is who she is, you know? And I thought it was really brilliant. So did you ever consider doing first person, or was it third person always?
So I did, because I think all of my books, yeah, all of these books are first person, except for Vera. So I was very, very intimidated about doing third person, because I haven't done it for like 10 years, I think. And so I really was like, okay, it's going to be first person. But then I thought, well, let's try third, because the other fun thing was I felt like the narrator, whoever is narrating it, is a little bit of a character in itself. And like what you said, you know, like kind of highlighting the ridiculousness of all of it, that was made possible through third person. And so I thought Vera was just the perfect character to kind of dive into third person. Somehow it just worked really well. Like sometimes with the other characters, I struggled a little bit with like third person. Like I would be writing, so I write really fast, and I don't really like read as I am writing. And then I would come back later and kind of skim it. And I'm like, oh my God, I just somehow switched into first person without even realizing it. And then I would have to kind of go back and change everything. So that was a real trip, but I had a lot of fun writing in third person. I feel like I learned a lot from it.
I thought it was great. It was just, it was cool to get in everybody's head, but not be fully in it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like I liked, like Julia, she was very complex, the way she completely had a whole character arc happen in a short amount of time, you know, completely like changed. She completely blossomed and we saw her grow, but it was interesting to see what was going on with her the first time we see her compared to the end. Like I loved the way we got to see it from outside of her head.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, so I feel such a connection with each and every character in there. And I think I put a little bit of my own life experience into each character. So with Julia, so Julia has a toddler who is very shy and would never want to talk to anyone. Like, you know, I want to say, oh, never talk to strangers, but in reality, like her toddler also does not speak with people who are obviously not strangers. And so Julia is very concerned about it. And that was actually based on, you know, when we had my first child, she was very much like that. And people would keep like being like, I think, you know, I think I'm seeing red flags, you know, or, you know, I'm concerned about her and stuff like that. And of course, it's like first time parents, you're just so filled with fear anyway. And then to have that kind of feedback, and then to know that like, well, but actually when we're alone with her, she's talking to us and she's talking way beyond like her, the milestones that she's supposed to be hitting. But then it's like, even when my brother, you know, and she sees my brother like almost every day, he's like, hi, you know, she'll just kind of like stare at him and like not say anything. I mean, she outgrew it, but it took a while. And then in the meantime, you're seeing kids her age, like very proudly, you know, speaking to everyone and being like, my name is so-and-so. And I'm sitting there thinking like, your name is obnoxious. That's what your name is.
And I thought you captured that so well, because we do, as parents, you worry about every little thing so much. And I thought you did a great job of showing, as a parent, sometimes you look at your child and you're like, wait, that isn't right. And then sometimes you're like, she's fine. Yeah. And then other times you're like, is she not fine?
Yeah.
And it's just a constant cycle of that. And I thought you really captured that well, Julia. I also loved in Julia the way when she finally, when Vera sends her out to actually like pursue her dream and to, you know, take a job as a photographer. I thought you did a great job of showing her guilt, that she's like, this is the best day I've had in 20 years. And then she immediately has that guilt, like, I'm a mom. Shouldn't my best day be always when I'm with my child? And sometimes it's not, and that's okay. You can have your best day and it not be related to your child. And I thought you did a great job of showing that constant struggle that you have with that. It was really brilliant.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just constant mom guilt 24/7.
For sure. Well, I was curious how you came up with, like, the pitch of the book is gold in and of itself. Vera is this, you know, eccentric character, and she decides to solve a murder because the police, you know, aren't taking it seriously enough. So she's taking over and she does all this. That's a great pitch in and of itself. But then you've got these other four characters or suspects. And they each, you know, you give a little bit as you go. You start out not knowing what their secret is and not knowing what their story is. And it's just a tiny little bit the way it rotates. And I really loved it. And I was curious, like, which came first? Like, did you think of Vera in the overall plot and fill the rest in? Or did you kind of come up with it all together? Did the characters come in later? How did that kind of come to pass?
Oh, man, that was a mess. So I thought of the pitch. You know, I was like, little old lady living above some sort of shop. I didn't know what shop it was. And then finds the dead body in her shop. And then when then I developed it into a little bit of a pitch where I was like, okay, as a tea shop, there will be four other characters and they're going to be suspects. And Vera is going to be like investigating them while at the same time forming friendships with them. And then I was like, so this was the first ever like whodunit I have ever done. Like I know that Dal A for Aunties, sometimes it's shelved under mystery, but there is no mystery. Like, you know who did it. The main character did it. This is the first time where I'm like, there is an actual mystery. I didn't know who did it. And then I was like, oh, okay, well, in order for them to be suspects, duh, you know, they need to have like some sort of connection to the victim. Oh my God, like, I didn't even know that. You know, I remember the moment where I realized like, oh yeah, each of them has to have a motive. That's why they're suspects. And I was like, wow, I'm so brilliant. No one, no other mystery writer has ever thought of that. And then I was like, okay, so somehow they're each like have a connection. And so then I thought, well, what is that connection? And I was like, wife. Okay, wife. And then another one was like, brother, twin brother. Ooh. That's how I came up with it. Each step of the way, I was like, oh my God, that's so brilliant. Oh, good job, me. You know?
Okay. Did you plan on, so when you were going in through that way and you're like, okay, there's a brother, we'll make him a twin brother. Did you immediately know that when Emma saw him, she would have to think it was her dad? Because for some reason, my brain didn't connect that. And then when he walked in and she saw it, I was like, oh, duh. She would think it. She didn't know her dad had died. So she would think that was her dad. And that didn't even occur to me until I read it.
Yeah. That was, so I wrote the first draft. Emma didn't have a reaction to Oliver. And then I read the first draft and I was like, oh, hang on, she should have some sort of reaction. And I was like, duh, you know, how did I miss that? Like, you miss so much when you're kind of drafting, you know, because you forget a lot.
For sure.
Like, I forget my own characters' names, so.
I do that too.
But what's really fun, actually, is that I was like, I'm going to have a self-insert in this book. And my husband was like, oh, who is it? And I was like, well, one of the characters, Sana, she's an artist and she has a really obnoxious mom. And so he, and then he was like, so are you Sana? And I was like, no, the self-insert is the mom who writes like four books a year. And it's always like, oh, darling, there's no such thing as writer's block.
That's amazing.
So I had a lot of fun with that.
Hold on, I lost sound.
No, I think you're okay.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I've got you now. I couldn't hear you for a second, Jesse. Well, one thing I also thought was really interesting about this is the way you managed to juxtapose, like, you know, you read in a lot of books the issues of, and especially culturally, of family pressures and guilt, you know, like your parents have expectations of you and then you have guilt because you're not fulfilling their expectations. And I thought this was super interesting because we see from Vera's side, her expectations, her guilting her son into wanting him to find somebody to slip and slide into somebody's DMs and find a nice girl. So you see that side, and then you also see these four characters each struggling with their own guilt and pressures from their own family. And I thought it was a really cool juxtaposition. Did you intend to show kind of the cross between those two?
Oh yeah, totally. Because like I always tell people, I am driven by a mixture of caffeine and Asian guilt. And so I kind of wanted to show that. And it's so funny, like seeing how my parents' expectations of me have changed over the years. So it used to be that, you know, they wanted me to join the family company, which I did. And then I wasn't actually very good at it. So then their expectation was that, well, be better at it. and then after my books started becoming more successful, and I was able to leave the family company to everyone's relief. Then my parents, oh my God, especially my dad, you know, he used to be like, oh, what was the point of you going and studying creative writing, you know? And then now he's like, you know, when your girls are going to off to college, you know, maybe talk to them about doing something like creative writing, where it's a valuable subject that he was like, oh, because it's something that they learn that can never be taken away from them. Like, they'll just have that. So I was like, oh, wow, you know, I never thought I would see the day where, I was like, I never thought I would see the day when my dad would say something like that. And then now he's like, oh, you know, have you finished writing another book yet? Do you have another book contract yet? And I'm like, Dad, like, I just sold one, you know, 2 months ago. Can you please calm down? And he's like, yeah, but that was 2 months ago. Like, you know, I've rented like more houses, you know, just in the past week alone. And I'm like, yeah, it's not, that's not how it works. The expectations are always changing. And then the other day, my mom was like, well, you slow down, you know, because I think, you know, your publishers are saying like, that's enough books, you know, we can't release that many books a year from you. So it's time to slow down. And I was like, oh my God, like I've reached the pinnacle of like Asian child. This is the Asian child end game, you know? And I'm like, where do I go from here? And then of course she's like, maybe it's time for you to think of having a third child. And I was like, oh, that's why. it's always evolving. And so I just thought like, of course, you know, Vera would have this like, first she would be like, oh wow, you know, my son is in law school, wow, my son is a lawyer in like a fancy firm in San Francisco. And then of course as soon as he gets that, she's like, but where are my grandbabies, you know? So yeah, I really wanted to show that.
And I thought it was cool too, because since we see so much of what Vera is thinking, it somehow you softened it. Like, you know, you always read the stories about the parents' expectations, but somehow being so close mm-hmm. to Vera kind of softened it. And, you know, at the beginning of the book, when you first start reading about her texting her son, you know, right away in the morning about what he needs to be doing mm-hmm. and like, you know, guilting him about settling down and having grandbabies and stuff. You know, she's a pain in the rear, but then the more you read, the more you're softened. And then I feel like you almost come.
Oops.
Oh no. Did we lose Lynn or did, yeah, I did think we lose me?
Frozen, but okay. It may take her a few minutes to unfreeze.
Full circle.
There she is.
Let me know when I'm unfrozen.
You're unfrozen.
Okay. Woo-hoo! You're unfrozen now. Okay.
I don't know when I froze, but I was, did you hear me mention Tilly before I froze?
Yeah.
Well, I thought he was a really interesting character because we don't meet him until the end, really, where we like see him as instead of just like phone calls. But I thought it was interesting how at the beginning we get him and, you know, he's just the son who doesn't call her back. And then as we go through, am I frozen again?
Yep, you're fine.
Okay. I'm getting paranoid now. But then kind of like the cast of characters in the book, throughout the book, the closer we get to Vera and kind of fall in love with her, we start to turn. Even though Tilly's mother is old world and kind of out of touch. Uh-oh. Did we lose Jessie? Oh, she's back.
Yeah, she's back. Am I sideways?
You are.
You're sideways. That's okay. Okay. You can go like this.
Okay, that should fix it. Okay, I'm so sorry. You're gonna have to like repeat the last question.
Oh my gosh, don't apologize at all. No, I was saying, I think it's super interesting that Tilly, we don't really meet him until the end. We see him throughout. Mm. And at the beginning of the book, we kind of get him. Like we see what his mom is, and he's busy and you know, he kind of doesn't have time for nonsense. And you're like, I feel that, you know, it's 4 a.m, you know, I've been staying with my mom, right? But kind of like the four characters in the book, the more we fall in love with Vera and get embroiled in all of everything she's doing, our empathy for Tilly kind of dissipates, or at least mine did, throughout the book. And so when we finally meet him, I feel like as a reader, I was just like the characters in the book, where I was like, where the hell have you been? Like it was just interesting the way you kind of turned that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of that in my family. Like as can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you're fine
now. Yeah, okay. So especially with a lot of my generation, most of us, I think, if not all, I think all of my cousins and I were sent abroad to study to the US or something. So we're all very Americanized. But you know, our parents have this very traditional like expectation. I know a few of my aunts and uncles, like they fully expected my cousins, actually my parents too, like when we came home, even after we got married, they kind of wanted us to live in their house, because that's one of the kids, even after they get married, they will stay, live with their parents. And so there's a lot of that, like, you know, like my husband, somehow it's still not close. He's complaining about not seeing us as often as they would like, which is every day. So I really wanted to show that, like, it's very difficult to kind of hit a compromise. I mean, I think we have finally, but like it took years, you know, to kind of like finally hit that balance where everyone is content, I guess. So like I see my parents 2 to 3 times a week, and the kids like see them and then also with my brother, where he would like take his kids on different days. So parents always have like you know, kids and grandkids to look forward to each day. But it was really difficult, like very, very tricky getting there. And there were years of like guilt trips, you know, of like, you know, I am going to die soon probably. And then then you're gonna regret it, but it'll be too late.
That's amazing.
We do have some questions from people tuning in. Do you want to save those or go ahead and start with some of them now?
Sure, yeah.
Sure. Okay, there's one question for Jessie. It's from one of your fans who said, does your own experiences as a photographer help you when you're writing your books?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So after I finished my master's degree in creative writing, I thought, you know, yeah, now I got like a master's degree from Oxford. I am hot shit. And every publisher going to be begging for like my books. This did not happen. It took me like another 10 years to get like a publishing deal. And in the meantime, I worked as a wedding photographer in Oxford. I felt really sad because, you know, my classmates were off doing amazing things. And then I was like, oh, and here I am. Like, you know, I love photography, but I just knew this wasn't what I wanted to do. But then later on, now I'm like, wow, I'm so grateful that I did do that, because like Dial A for Aunties, the main character is a wedding photographer. I had to do zero research for it, which is always nice because research sucks. And then Four Aunties and a Wedding, that takes place in Oxford. And again, you know, I had to do very little research because I just knew like all the wedding venues. And Julia in Vera Wang, she is trying to be a photographer. And so I again, like I knew what it's like to kind of try building a portfolio and try building your own like brand and little business. So I'm really thankful that I spent those years doing that.
Yeah. Another one of your readers wonders, Jesse, how much input you have into your book's titles, because they are fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much. I have a lot of input, but my book titles are really a mix. So Dial A for Aunties, one of my friends came up with that and I thought it was brilliant. Four Aunties and a Wedding, my editor at Berkeley came up with that. Mm-hmm. And then she also came up with the third Dial A for Aunties title, which I think we have it confirmed. I think it's going to be The Good, the Bad, and the Aunties, which I was like, oh my God, I actually laughed out loud when I heard it. But Vera Wang's title I came up with, and as well as the Well That Was Unexpected, I came up with that too. So it's a real combination.
The next question we have is for both you, Jesse, and Lynn. Both of you have written for different readers, adults, mm-hmm. young adults, middle-aged readers. Does the process differ for you as a writer, or is it the same process no matter what age level you're aiming for?
Oh my gosh, I would love to hear your answer on this, Lynn.
Oh, well, okay. I don't have any middle grade, and so I can't speak to that. But for YA and for adult, for me, it doesn't differ at all. In my head, the only difference is the age of the protagonist. Like, okay, Liz is 17, and this is what she's doing. I don't ever think like, oh, I need to teen this down or age it or change it. I just, it's sort of the character just takes on their adventure, and I just roll with it from there. What about you, Jesse?
I love that. And it's the exact same thing for me. So I let the parameters of their side, like their path, I guess. So for YA, obviously, a lot of the times they're still in school. So then they have a lot of boundaries that just naturally come from being a high school student. And in the same for middle grade, I figured, you know, well, he's going to have like a curfew. He's going to have parents who want to know what's going on in his life. And so within those boundaries, it just became very natural, like what their priorities would be. And then of course, for middle grade, all I had to do was like, okay, well, there's no romance. And that was it. Like there was like the depth and the like the writing is just very much the same.
How do you for your young adult novels, both of you, I know things change, like their slang terms and what's cool, what's not. How do you stay current with that? Do you have secret sources?
Oh my God. Okay, I feel like my young adult days are numbered because of that very reason. Because like every passing year, I am very aware that I'm like, oh no, you know, I'm getting older, I'm getting further away from that. And one day they're going to be like, oh, this is why we should never let millennials write YA. I don't know. What about you, Lynn? I am dying to know the secret to fixing this.
I feel like kind of the same. Like you're like, I feel like I'll just know when somebody's like, this is terrible. Like I'm picturing that Steve Buscemi gif, you know, like, hello, you, you know, but I feel, I've got a whole bunch of kids. So I feel like I've spent the past a million years surrounded by teenagers. So it kind of seeps in through osmosis after listening to it all the time. Mm. And I do feel like social media helps. Like I waste plenty of time just scrolling through TikTok like everybody else. So again, those things just kind of seep in. But I also try not to go too heavy on the like the slang and the trends, because the way publishing works, you submit a book today, it's a year and a half before it hits the shelves. So, you know, you don't want to MySpace yourself where all of a sudden you're going like crazy talking about TikTok and then they're like, oh, government killed that 2 years ago. And what was TikTok again, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, slang, you know, like, I mean, the things that people say today is a joke and ridiculous a year from now. So I try to like keep that to a minimum because, you know, it's so fluid. I'm sure they'll kick me out eventually.
I think the quote is, dying is easy, comedy is hard. Both of you are known for your sense of humor in your writing. Is that just come naturally or is it hard work for you as writers?
I feel like I'm just a silly heart who, I mean, my husband jokes all the time that he's like, I don't think your frontal lobe ever closed. Like, I'm just immature and ridiculous. Like, I don't feel like comedy sounds like it's a lofty goal, like something you're trying to achieve, or I don't know if I hit that, but more that I'm just a silly person and just kind of ridiculous. And that's just my sweet spot where I feel comfortable.
Yeah. Oh, I love that because that really comes through in your books where I feel like the main characters never take themselves too seriously, even though like they are so actually deep and very, very complex, which actually works a lot better that the fact that they are so well fleshed out and everything. And then there's a layer of like ridiculousness. I love that. It makes it so refreshing. For myself, it's because I'm a very needy person. And growing up, like that was, humor was my thing. Because I know I'm like gorgeous now, but I didn't used to be. And so I was always like, okay, well, I'm gonna be the funny girl. And so, you know, that kind of became my personality. Like even now with my therapist, I'm like, well, am I your funniest patient though? And she's like, yes, you are. Okay.
Another one of the viewers wants to know from Jesse if it's true that we might see Dial A for Aunties in another form.
Yes, Dial A for Aunties sold to Netflix. So it is in the process of being adapted into a movie, which is very exciting. And then actually Vera Wang sold a TV series. And I really hope like we're going to be able to announce soon. I saw the draft of the announcement. So hopefully that means that it's going to run soon. And actually, I was going to ambush Lynn about her books. I was going to be like, tell me which one is going to be turned into like a movie or a TV series.
Yeah, I'm still at that holding pattern where it's like, I know something about one of them that I'm not allowed to say anything about. So it's still early on. I know.
So you're not even allowed to say which one?
I think they're pretty
can you say
about that.
Oh, okay.
Hollywood level or something.
It's a YA.
Okay. Oh my God, I'm so excited.
But you know, it's so funny about that stuff because I'm the type of person, like literally, like I peek and like I'm a grown-ass woman And at Christmas time, if there's a present under the tree for me and no one's around, I'll totally like peel up the tape on a corner just to look inside. Like I cannot keep a secret. And all the time, like I'll get something like, ooh, there's going to be like a special edition of this book. And I'm like, can I tell everybody? When can I tell everybody? And you know how publishing is. It all moves very slow. And they're like, I don't know, we'll like tell people sometime. And then I'll be like,
yeah,
put out a teaser. Nobody cares but me, but I'm still like, hey, you guys, there's something. Yeah. I'm sure everybody's like,
no, people do care.
So, and I'm so sitting on top of this stuff drives me out of my mind. So I'm so jealous of you, Jesse, that you're allowed to share things. And I'm just freaking out that Vera is going to be on screen. I'm so excited. I love her so much.
Okay. So just to clarify, it is 100% because I always tell like producers when I have a call with them, I'm like, you know, when, what can I say before the announcement? Because I really need to like my nemesis to know that they suck. And that I'm and that always goes over well. They're always like, okay, you know, we totally empathize with this. We understand. You can say, you know, you have sold this, but like, you just can't say who it was sold to or, you know, any of like the finer details. And then I'm like, okay, that's good enough for me for now.
I'm going to try that. Even though I don't think I have a nemesis, I'll find one.
We do have, actually, I have a question for Lynn because you've written some amazing romantic comedies. Can you tell people why? I mean, they're often dismissed as silly and fluffy and inconsequential and as opposed to all the testosterone films that get produced and are really important. kind of in your own words, tell those that might not understand romantic comedies why they matter, why they're important.
You know why they matter. The reason why I love them and the reason why I write them, I grew up watching all the rom-coms. I mean, all the time. And I feel like they're hopeful. Like even when they're the ridiculous slapstick ones or even when they're serious, you know, you're getting a happy ending and it's a fun ride. I feel like I've, especially with YA, every time I get a message from somebody who's like, who will call oh, your book is my comfort read. That is all I want to hear because we all have that. Like I have my Gilmore Girls and my You've Got Mail and your little comfort go-to things. And we all have that. And I feel like romantic comedy for a lot of us in book form is kind of comfort reads. You know, you've got that guaranteed happy ending. So you can kind of handle the conflict because you know it's going to end up the right way, you know? Like La La Land destroyed me because I thought it was going in that direction and I cannot even hear a xylophone without having like flashbacks of my sadness at the ending. Sorry, I'm still not over La La Land.
Before we run out of time, can I ask both of you to remind us of your new book, a little bit about what it's about? We'll start with you, Jesse. What is Vera Wong's unsolicited advice for murderers?
So Vera Wong is basically Knives Out meets Kim's Convenience. And it's about a little old lady who lives above a tea shop who one day finds a dead body in the middle of her shop. And she decides that no one sniffs out a wrongdoing better than a Chinese mother would. And so she decides that she's the one who's going to investigate this murder.
Okay. And I have to add to what Jesse said. Vera draws her, before the police get there, she draws a chalk line around the body because she knows that's what they have to do. I love that so much. That is so brilliant.
And Lynn, what about the love wager?
Sorry. I wasn't ready for this. I didn't know you were going to ask me. I forgot. What was my book about? The love wager is about two people who meet at a wedding and they kind of have a drunken little moment together that night. And then they go their separate ways. And they each kind of in their own separate lives decide they're going to make some things happen in their personal lives. So they each end up on a dating app and get matched together. And so she's like, oh, I'm going to mess with this guy from the wedding. And she's like, hey, how come you never called? And he's like, what? She's like, I'm messing with you. She's like, I don't want to date you. And they kind of become friends and they both want to find somebody. So they kind of become buddies and they start every time they set up a date, they'll go to the same restaurant. So if their dates suck, they can go have tacos together. And so they're kind of, it's friends to lovers. They kind of become besties as they're each trying to find love. And, you know, then fake dating and shenanigans happen. So.
And what's next?
I love it.
What's next for you, Jesse, as a writer? Can you share anything?
So I recently just finished writing a love story. So it's not a rom-com. It's quite a serious love story. It's the first time I've written in such a like dramatic genre before. I would compare it to like The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, that kind of genre, like sweeping, you know, over multiple generations. So it's my agent, I think she sent it to my editor. So we'll see what she says. I'm very nervous about it. I'm like, oh my God, like how long has she had it now? Does this mean she hates it? Does this mean she hates me? Oh my God. So, very fun.
And then you have to email your editor and be like, I'm your funniest author, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Lynn, do we have anything?
I would I would love to know what you're up to next, Lynn.
My next YA, Betting on You, comes out in November. And that's like my young adult version of When Harry Met Sally, just kind of an homage to Nora Ephron. And then I just finished and submitted my next adult YA, my next adult rom-com that comes out next March. So yeah, so that's where I'm at.
Oh, I love it. You have so many books coming out.
What?
You have so many books coming out. I love it.
It's wild times. Sometimes I'm jumping from one to the other and it's, you know yeah. a little bit about how that goes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yes.
Are you, both of you, on social media? Can readers learn more about your books on different platforms, Jesse?
Yes, I'm on Twitter and Instagram. I'm more active on Instagram these days. It's at Jesse Q Sutanto. That's my Instagram handle.
Yeah, I'm also most active on Instagram. I'm at Lynn Painter Kirkle. And I really need to ditch the Kirkle at the end of it because that's not on my book, so nobody knows. And I'm on Twitter at LA Painter, I think it is, but I'm not on there as much, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're just about out of time. Is there anything else either of you would like to share with
this? Well, team? I just wanted to thank Lynn for doing this with me. My editors at Berkeley were like geeking out, you know, they were like, oh my God, you got Lynn Painter? Like, how? And I was like, because I know her. Yeah.
I'm so happy you asked. This is the first time I've ever been the one in conversation. And I totally was like, oh, I don't think I'm cool enough to do this. Like people who do are usually like, they know how to interview and stuff. And I'm just kind of a mess. So I was really scared.
No.
I think I was
nervous. Oh my God. So you were amazing. And thank you so much. You put me really at ease. Normally I'm like super sweaty, but right now I'm only a little bit sweaty. So good job.
Well, it's because your book was so good. It's easy to talk about. Hold on, I have to show you something and then I know we need to go. I was like, I'll tab it like book readers do. I'll tab it. So I know what to reference. And then like, I literally have tabs on like every page. So I finally was like, well, I need to stop that because it's pointless. Like they mean nothing because they're everywhere. So I love the book so much.
Oh, thank you. Well, this was so fun. So thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
I'd like to thank both of our authors, Jesse Sutanto, whose new book is Vera Wong's Unsolicited Advice for Murderers, and Lynn Painter, whose new book is The Love Wager. Both are available at bookstores near you or The Poison Pen. And I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in to another virtual author event at The Poison Pen Bookstore. Thank you.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.